from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Today marks the six-month anniversary of the Camp Fire, the deadliest and most destructive wildfire in California history, and the deadliest in the country in more than a century. The fire tore through more than 150,000 acres in Butte County, destroyed more than 14,000 homes, and claimed 85 lives. And the fire leveled the town of Paradise, where more than 1,000 residents still lack housing and thousands more lack potable water. But rebuilding efforts are underway, and we'll talk about how residents are faring and what still concerns them and what gives them hope. That's next after this news. Welcome to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Last November, the deadliest and most destructive wildfire in California's history scorched over 150,000 acres in Butte County and killed 85 people. The campfire burned almost the entire town of Paradise, displacing thousands of its residents, contaminating its drinking water, and leaving millions of tons of toxic debris behind. But 6 months later, the community is beginning to rebuild. And we're going to reflect on the tragedy and talk about the progress that's been made so far. Here in studio with us is Sonia Hudson, reporter for KQED News. Good morning, Sonia.
Good morning, Michael.
We also welcome Mark Albert, who is morning host and reporter for North State Public Radio. He's also co-host of After Paradise, a weekly program dedicated to post-campfire recovery information. Welcome, Mark Albert.
Good morning, Michael.
Good morning to you. And Mark, let me begin with you. In the aftermath of the fire, there was an incredible sense of the difficulties. We're 6 months out now, and the difficulties are still there. Let me just ask you, I mean, this is really the most deadly fire in over a century, and the pieces are still very much with us. What's being put together, and what is there that maybe reflects some hope at this point?
Well, the devastation is so incredibly, the devastation is just so vast, it's so difficult to explain. There are trucks moving debris off of the hillsides, coming down in the valley, almost in convoys, I would say, hundreds and hundreds of trucks a day, and it's barely made a dent. There are trees being cut around, you know, almost around, or during daylight hours, they're piled up in huge mounds everywhere, almost looks like lumber yards in places. But the progress is slow just because of the incredible amount of devastation.
It's just such a mammoth job that's up ahead. And when you talk about the trees, there's as much worry about the trees and the cost of removing the trees almost as there is, or maybe even more, than the concern about contamination of the water pipes.
Well, that's absolutely right. There are people who are told that they need to remove, well, the county is removing trees from the public right-of-way from overhanging or near roads. PG&E is removing trees within a certain distance from power lines. But beyond that, it's the property owner's responsibility to remove the dead trees. Paradise, not an especially prosperous place. A lot of people living really on the margins. And they don't have the hundreds and hundreds or thousands of dollars to pay for tree removal. So you have people who are prepared to rebuild, concerned that there's going to be hazards and out there, and nobody's going to be taking responsibility or have the financial resources to do that, to make it safe. The county could, and the town could potentially place liens against people, but at the same time, you know, having a fine for a bill that you can't pay is not really going to solve the problem.
And we're talking really about nothing short of rebuilding a town. And in the wake of the devastation of this fire, there was a housing crisis before the fire. And what's the status now? You got labor shortage, you got higher costs, contractor shortage. It's pretty grave, isn't it?
Absolutely. And not only were the people who were burned out affected, but there's a trickle-down effect where those that do have the resources, those that were well insured, are able to rent apartments or homes or buy homes in Chico or in other surrounding communities. And people who were living in those affordable rentals find themselves being priced out, being told that they need to move on. I actually, a colleague of my wife's was informed that her rent was going up by $1,400, more than doubling. I have other friends whose rent is going up by more than $100, and they really can't afford it. You can drive around Chico and other communities, and there are people living in dilapidated trailers and RVs parked on the street. The scale of the devastation is so massive, about 14 or 15% of the housing in the county was absolutely destroyed. And unlike in the Bay Area, our surrounding counties, you know, Butte County is a really is mainly agricultural and also forested, and the surrounding counties are even more so, more sparsely populated. There aren't existing structures within commute distance to absorb the people that have been forced from their homes.
And Sonia Hudson, most of the people, most of the residents aren't coming back.
I think there are a lot of people who are still trying to figure that out. They, the city of Chico estimates there's about 19,000 more people within the city limits than before the fire. And, you know, as Mark said, those people are living in dilapidated trailers. They're living in spare bedrooms, especially those people that can't necessarily afford a rental in this extraordinarily tight market, and so they're gonna have to make a choice eventually about whether they're gonna move far away or they're gonna try to stick it out where they've lived a lot of them for decades.
Still looks like, and this is what I'm reading and reporting, it still looks like a post-apocalyptic wasteland up there, doesn't it?
Yeah, it absolutely does. I mean, as you know, as Mark said, they've been working so hard to clear the debris. It's just like when you go up into Paradise on the main road skyway, it's just truck after truck, these huge dump trucks rumbling down the road, carrying debris. And it's just kind of a constant stream. But you drive around and it looks really similar to how it did right after the fire. And to me, it was really just a reminder of how hard this community is working to recover, but still how far they still have to go.
They also have to rebuild in the face of being a fire-prone area. And how to reduce that risk should be a part of the equation. How much is it, really?
I think that, it's still really too early to tell. We've been talking ever since the fire broke out. I mean, everyone knew that this was a really fire-prone area, and those questions have been raised ever since the fire broke out. You know, should Paradise rebuild? But I think there's a big spirit of resiliency in the town. You know, their website is, you know, Make It Paradise. They want to rebuild the town to what it was and actually improve it. And the good news is that in 2008, the building codes were updated. And so that made homes a lot more fireproof. So the new homes will also have to adhere to those new codes.
And Mark Albert, I think the biggest headache right now may be replacing all this contaminated water lines, isn't it?
Well, yes. The officials are still attempting to figure out what to do and how to isolate the contamination and how to clear the lines. I have not heard them say that they were going to replace the lines. I was out yesterday, and there were people giving out water. You can drive up and get a case of water from the Baptist Church, and there are people who are on the neighboring water company, Del Oro Water District, which the officials have said that they don't have contamination. People don't trust it, and they're coming to get that bottled water. There's real concern. And going back to what Sonia said, that there was a major fire that rolled through 10 years ago in 2008, and it didn't quite reach the scale of the campfire, but it burned a lot of trees, and the vegetation management since then, it's an open question about how well the fire breaks or other removals that happened, how well that was all maintained, and whether the hillsides that they cleared regrew with very combustible brush. Typically, our fire season in California, even up here, you know, it's late September and early October, and then we get some rain. And this year, or last year, the rains were very, very late. And after the intensity of the heat, with so many days over 100 degrees, it dries out trees. It also, but it especially dries out brush. And you have stuff like Scotch broom that will just becomes nearly explosive. One of the things that I find entertaining or interesting is that there's a big eucalyptus tree, right? And having experienced the Oakland Hills fire in 1991, there's a big eucalyptus tree right on the skyway. Everything else burned, you know, around it. And for some reason, that somehow survived. It's right where they're building a gigantic camp for workers who are going to be doing who are doing the rebuilding and doing construction work on what was a golf course.
I should mention that the estimate now is about 2 years to clean up the water contamination. But let's talk about health for a moment with you, Sonia. I mean, people are moving back, but there's real concern about the debris, as we mentioned. I mean, a lot of the debris is contaminated. I think in your piece you talked about lead and arsenic and asbestos, all of that. But water contamination as well. I mean, these are really serious mountains we have to climb here still.
Yeah, absolutely. And just looking back earlier this year, there was a lot of controversy and conversation about this idea of should people be allowed to camp either in trailers or in, you know, just regular dry camping tents next to the debris on their property. Ultimately, the town council allowed this and then repealed the ordinance that allowed people to do this, citing concerns about FEMA pulling disaster funding from them. But they haven't really been enforcing the ban, so it's kind of a weird formality there. But there really are serious health concerns with living that close to debris piles. There's all sorts of toxic substances. Obviously, the water still is not drinkable and won't be for several years. So that's a big concern for businesses and also residents whose, you know, homes did not burn down. A lot of people have brought in water pumps to deal with that. But again, it costs more money.
Well, let's bring in Melissa Schuster. She is a Paradise Town Council member. She lives in an RV on her burned out property. And Melissa, good to have you with us on Forum. Good morning to you.
Thank you for having me. And I got to tell you, I've been listening and, you know, I living here every day, and being a part of this, I guess I have a different perspective. I think that the work that has been done is remarkable. It has, of course, we absolutely have a long, long way to go. I think it has helped clarify how much work is still to be done. But I really don't want the message to be that we're still in this dire situation. We were talking about it early on. We were talking about 2 to 3 years before the debris would be cleaned up, and now we are on track for debris removal completion by fall. That is remarkable. It went from 2 to 3 years to less than a year.
Let me come back to you in a minute, Melissa, because I want to ask Mark. Do you see the signs of hope that she's pretty much presenting here?
Mark, well, certainly. I certainly agree with Melissa, you know, up to a point. However, you know, just yesterday I was interviewing people who've been staying in three families staying in sharing a motel room, and not even a luxurious motel room. And they're so kind of afraid or almost ashamed to invite me into the room because it's just piled up with stuff to the ceiling. There are people out in Concow, not in Paradise, but in unincorporated Butte County, who are just, you know, they're depending on volunteers who are taking it upon themselves to distribute goods, gasoline. I was out delivering gas cans to people to run generators. This is 6 months after the fire. There are people who have they hired somebody there with a mobile mill, and they were milling up burnt trees to have lumber to rebuild their own structure, delivering baby clothes to people. I spoke with folks who were just, they're happy to be alive, but at the same time, there's so much that they need to do that they're debilitated.
Mark, I'm going to say goodbye to you and thank you very much for joining us. Mark Albert, again, is morning host and reporter
thank
for
so
North
much.
State Public Radio, co-host of After Paradise, a weekly program that's dedicated to post-camp fire recovery information. And Melissa Schuster, how do you repopulate a town with almost no buildings?
Well, it's true that we lost 90% of our structures. However, we're already, like, just got figures today, and the estimate is that there are about 3,000 people living back in paradise. 3,000 people is bigger than a lot of communities that I've lived in the past. It doesn't come close to the 26,500 that were here originally, but it's certainly a step in the right direction.
Well, isn't another step in the... I'm sorry. Go ahead, please. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
I don't want to diminish what Mark was saying about people who are still struggling. Yes, they are. And this is a disaster. Absolutely. But for me, it's the progress that has been made in 6 months for this disaster as compared to other disasters, fire disasters in California, given the magnitude of this, is remarkable.
Well, what about housing? I mean, because Mark was alluding to that. I mean, we're going to talk to Mayor Chico and find out what's going on in terms of all the people who have migrated there out of necessity. But there have been recent advances allowing RVs and trailers on larger lots. FEMA, although it's been criticized for being too slow, has actually come into the picture. So these are the kinds of things that do give you hope, I presume.
Absolutely. And at the same time, we're understanding that housing is going to impact our economy tremendously. I was out talking to businesses that have opened. By the way, we have over 150 businesses open now on the ridge. And the biggest concern is workforce housing. Especially with gas prices what they are right now, asking people to commute to, you know, low-paying jobs or to the Dutch Brothers in town is just not feasible. So in addition to finding temporary housing for those who lost their homes in the fire, we also need to identify workforce housing so that our businesses can come back and succeed.
And let me actually bring Randall Stone into this. He's mayor of Chico. And Randall Stone, good to have you with us on Forum this morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Well, you got a lot of people who have relocated to Chico. How has that affected your economy, and what are still the challenges you're facing with people from Paradise?
Well, our biggest problem is still real estate and locating and building housing, so which has multiple different facets that make it more and more challenging. You know, how do you have the labor force in order to build additional housing? How do you get housing online quickly? Are there some CEQA exemptions that we can streamline through the process locally that will help projects move forward? What we know is that if we don't house these people, they're either going to have to pay more and up the ante in either commute cost or more expensive housing to remain in the area, or they're going to have to leave. And both of those put tremendous pressure on an employer. They're going to have to raise their wages just to keep somebody in town with probably a substandard housing arrangement. Either have to pay them more or move on. So we're just trying to keep the employees within the community as much as possible. And that's trying to find housing everywhere we can.
You're just trying to keep it as stable as you can. I understand that. But could you address the concerns some have raised about the homeless shelters? There's been criticism of those who were pre-disaster homeless as opposed to those who have come into the shelters since the fire.
Well, we had 1,100 homeless people in the city of Chico, and there were about 400 homeless people in the town of Paradise prior to the campfire. So we most certainly absorbed a good portion of those people. But you know, there's also people, there's so many that are living in fifth wheels and travel trailers, that this was an exacerbated problem that was already an ugly problem to begin with. Our homeless problem isn't too far beyond those 1,400 numbers. I can't imagine. We have a regression line showing your homeless numbers are expected to be about the same increase as they have been, say for the 20% increase that we've had in general population. So that puts some strain on us. It makes some homeless areas much more evident because there are just more people there. And they're producing more debris, but also where a family or a couple might be able to camp in a car, sleep in their car, is now occupied by a travel trailer, which is going to exacerbate your homeless concerns as well. But, I mean, let's face it, our community is in trauma, collective trauma. So everything that you would expect from a human emotional response to this is playing out. Fear, denial, anger, lashing out. I mean, in some particular areas, the community is actually attacking itself. We had a group of political activists that were looking to boycott the major and picket the major economic engine in the community. So people lose sight of what's up and what's down because they're scared and they're angry at everything that's happening. But at the end of the day, we're in a federal disaster zone, and that has.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned the concern about trauma, because Butte County schools need more mental health counselors. That the word has been put out, a lot of trauma, a lot of housing uncertainty on top of that trauma, and teachers need this kind of help as well. There is less transparency among the teachers than there is among the children, clearly. Dana Silveira and her fiancé lost their home in the campfire. They now live in a rental in Chico, and Dana talked with KQED's Polly Stryker about why they might not rebuild.
It's really sad to still be here. People are really suffering here. So the thought of going where people have hope is good. Where people don't talk about the fire every day would be nice.
Let me go back, Melissa Schuster, to you, if I may. Again, Melissa Schuster is town council member and lives in an RV on her burned-out property. There's a volunteer town council that hired a disaster consultant out of Pittsburgh. And I'd like to hear, I think they're laying out plans, aren't they, in terms of, these are people who work with Hurricane Katrina in Louisiana, worked also with the floods in Tennessee. They're laying out a plan. To what degree is that moving forward?
And thank you. I do want to talk about that, but I also want to go back for just a second and say that it is, in terms of mental health, addressing the mental health concerns that we have, it is, I found it so unusual, but certainly remarkable that literally every meeting that I am in, no matter what the subject of mental health is a part of that conversation. So this is something that we all recognize is critical right now. And as we move forward into home rebuilding, you know, I think that there's a lot of people that think, well, if I can just get in the process of building a home, it will help my mental health and my thought processes moving forward. And yet, if those of us who have built homes know how difficult that is and how impactful it is to relationships. So mental health is something that absolutely does need to be a part of all of our conversations. Yeah,
and we haven't even mentioned the challenges with insurance. We're coming up on a break. I want you to save your thoughts about the group. I think it's called the Urban Design Associates, who are working with the town of Paradise. And I'd like to invite you, our listeners, to join this conversation. We're discussing Paradise and Chico 6 months after the campfire. And if you've had to recover after a major tragedy, we'd like to hear from you about those first few months. What are they like, and how can the rest of us help? You can give us a call now at our toll-free number, 866-733-6786. The number again to join us, 866-733-6786. You can also get in touch with us on Twitter. We're at KQED Forum, or email us with any questions you might have or concerns you might want to express, forum@kqed.org. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're focusing on Paradise, beginning to rebuild 6 months after campfire. Sonia Hudson with us, reporter for KQED News, and Randall Stone, mayor of the city of Chico, and Melissa Schuster, Paradise Town Council member. And you can join us. In fact, I invite you to do that. Our toll-free number, again, is available to you. It's 866-733-6786, or email forum@kqed.org. I want to mention the fact that PG&E actually was told by a judge that they have to tour the wildfire ravaged Paradise. And some of you may indeed want to comment on PG&E or insurance or many other things that we've been talking about that really make this whole picture and the gestalt of it understandable. I want to go back, though, if I could, Melissa Schuster, to you. You talk about what the map is for rebuilding. And I ask you that because I'm looking at a listener comment here who writes, has there been any consideration for not rebuilding Paradise? The location clearly is a hazard. Also, from my understanding, a lot of people lived on the margins in Paradise. How will rebuilding there help their situation? If Paradise is rebuilt, who can afford to really live there?
You know, that is a really great question, and I think that's one of the purposes of UDA's outreach to the community. UDA is a planning consultant that was gifted to the town of Paradise to sort of reach out to the community and ask those questions. The first community outreach meeting was on February 22nd, and there were well over 1,000 people in attendance. So, and those were the people that were rebuilding. From that and subsequent meetings, all extremely well attended, there was no question that Paradise was rebuilding.
Okay, we're going to go to calls. Before we do, let me go back to Randall Stone, mayor of the city of Chico. Your thoughts about the whole rebuilding process, Mayor?
Well, there's no question that there's going to be different design standards for the town of Paradise, and that's going to, at least in part, gentrify some sections of the community, and the city of Chico has to be prepared to expect that large scale of change in demographics, socioeconomics, and economics. So if it becomes more expensive to live in Paradise, we can expect that if people are trying to remain in the area, that Chico will take that influx, and that's going to demand changes in the way we build and our housing types. We've been building, you know, 5-bedroom and 10-bedroom mansions based on our fee schedule since I've become mayor December 4th of last year, 4 weeks after the Camp Fire. We've begun making some of those changes that will help enhance that, but that's one of the things that we have to be prepared for is what is Paradise going to look like 5 years down the road? And we know the population numbers for typical disasters and how quickly those populations return to the devastated area. We're doing everything we can to buck that statistic.
Yeah, when you talk about housing prices, there was a recent study that came out that said Butte housing affordability has, of course, not so surprisingly, dropped steeply, but has fell more than any place in the state.
Right. We increased our population by 20%. And housing costs are appreciating at a higher rate than that. We, in the city of Chico, our median household income prior to the fire, and presumably still, is $44,000 a year per household. That's a household income. Median home prices before the fire were $325,000. They're now up to about $380,000, $385,000. So we were having a tough time meeting those affordability numbers to begin with. We're going to have to and have them committed to restoring those 1s and 2 bedrooms that are market-based affordable housing that will house a lot of those Paradise residents. But it's taking a full-scale paradigm shift in the way we do business and the way we did business just 6 months earlier.
Again, if you would like to join us, I invite you to do that. If you'd like to be involved in the conversation here and talk about and reflect about the rebuilding of Paradise, which has begun 6 months now from the devastating campfire, you can join us at our toll-free number. It's 866-733-6786, or email us, forum at kqed.org, or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is at kqedforum. Zach joins us, and Zach, let me get you on the air here. Hi.
Thank you for taking my call, Michael. Regarding those that had mortgages, are they on the hook for their outstanding balance?
Sonia, do you know?
You know, I'm actually not sure, but if you give me just a minute, I can look it up and get back to you.
Okay. We'll try to find the answer to that. And thank you for the question, Zach. Sonia is busily at work finding the answer. And let me get another caller on.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
I was going to say, related to that, there's impacts to property taxes from a devastated property that are substantial as well, because you'd be zeroing out the devastated property, but you don't zero out the land, which makes things complicated for when people are paying property taxes on a devastated property, even with a calamity loss. So there's lots of different intricacies, whether it's insurance is going to cover the mortgage or whether they're on the hook for the mortgage. And those types of questions become ever more complicated as you get further down the bureaucratic maraise.
Well, insurance companies are pretty reluctant now, or their rates have ballooned enormously because this is a fire-prone area.
Right.
Let me get another caller here. Kate, that's you. Kate is joining us from Inverness. Welcome.
Good morning. I want to make sure your listeners know that some inmates in San Quentin have felt strongly that they wanted to contribute to the rebuilding effort, but of course they can't. So they wrote a beautiful song called Paradise is Rising, and they've offered it as a benefit for the North Valley Community Foundation. So if you make a donation to that foundation, you can hear the song. So I encourage your listeners to go to nvcf.org.
Okay, I thank you for that, and I'm going to get a response now to that caller from Sonia.
Yes, so some fast research. Homeowners are still technically on the hook for their mortgages, but it's up to the lender. They can suspend payments for a while or, you know, put off a foreclosure, and also then that's where your insurance comes in, and your insurance would be, you know, hopefully would help you pay off those payments.
Can you also talk, Sonia, about what's happening with respect to PG&E? I mean, this federal judge, as I said, has told PG&E board that they're going to have to tour the ravaged paradise and see what the wildfire has wrought there. And this is actually taking place, yeah?
Yeah, so that's taking place today and tomorrow. And this happened during a probation hearing for basically the fallout of the 2010 San Bruno pipeline explosion, for which PG&E was found criminally liable. And, you know, PG&E has said in regulatory filings they believe that they will be found responsible for the campfire. And so this federal judge, Judge Alsup, has, issued this sentence yesterday that the entire board of directors for PG&E must visit the campfire and San Bruno by mid-July to kind of understand the devastation that was, you know, likely caused by their equipment.
And if I could go back to you, Melissa Schuster, there is community development director Susan Hartman, who I'm sure you're familiar with. She's on record as saying that if you built about 400 homes each year, it would be about 10 times what the town has historically built. It would still take 15 years to get back to what was.
Yes, that's right. So, you know, along part of the things that the vision that is coming out of from the community that UDA is, you know, leading the vision process is a community that may not be 26,500 people. We, in terms of safety, in terms of just the ability to build back homes, we're looking at larger lot sizes and less population. I think it's also important to note that we're looking at low-income housing or affordable housing in a different way as well. So part of the issues that we had in this fire is that people were living in dilapidated homes on you know lots way far at the end of a cul-de-sac that we just couldn't reach them in an emergency. So bringing those people into areas where they can be cared for and taken care of a little bit easier makes sense. So we're just throwing all the ideas out on the table, and let's build a community that has all of those pieces in it, the affordable pieces, the, Mayor Stone mentioned gentrification. Well, there were areas in Paradise that were, you know, kind of that, and we need all of those pieces. Paradise needs to be diverse, and it needs all of those things in a way that makes sense. Paradise didn't; it just happened. It wasn't planned, and it didn't make sense. Now we have the opportunity to build back in a way that addresses a lot of these concerns.
You do have only, I guess there were, what, 8 or 9 schools? Only one is open now, and the hospital status is still uncertain?
That's correct.
Yeah.
Those are some challenges that we're... One of the things that we're looking at with the hospital is working to get permission to build an emergency center. The emergency room survived. It was damaged, but it survived because it was relatively new. But typically they're not, you have to have a hospital associated with it. So we're looking at establishing a standalone emergency room.
Well, there's a clinic, though, with about 3 dozen doctors, I guess, isn't there? Still,
yes.
Who are
yes.
working at a clinic
yes.
nearby, run by the hospital. Yeah. Let me get another caller aboard here, and that's you. Tyra from Santa Rosa. Good morning.
Yes. Thank you for taking my call. So I am a fire survivor from the Tubbs Fire. But I lived in Paradise and Chico for 40 years before moving to Santa Rosa, taught at Paradise Middle School, which is one of the ones that's currently closed. And my comment relates to, Michael, what you said or asked about what can people do to help the folks in Paradise. And one of the biggest obstacles for fire survivors in terms of rebuilding is settling with their insurance companies. And right now, one of the things that people can do is to pressure the state insurance commissioner to do more for the people of Paradise. For instance, the state insurance commissioner there's a new person that's in the office, and my friend John Eisenberg, there's an article about him in the Press Democrat, so you can just Google it. There are so many out-of-state, unlicensed adjusters working for these insurance companies and making it so difficult. I've been working with about 50 survivors in Paradise. So whatever people can do, and that includes Mr. Stone as the mayor of Chico, I mean, some of these issues that are in front of the elected officials could be resolved if the insurance companies would just do a better job. So I'm asking for people to put pressure onto the insurance commissioner, and I'd like to hear a comment from Mayor Stone and anyone else who wishes to comment on this, and I'll take my comment, the answer, off the air.
All right, thank you, Tyra. Mayor Stone.
Michael, if you don't mind, I would like to address that. I appreciate her call and her comments. She's absolutely right. This has been one of the biggest impediments to people who just aren't used to dealing with insurance companies. And with that said, I would like people to know that we have been working very closely with the insurance commissioner. He has visited Paradise several times. He's new, but he is very engaged. And she's right. We've got to get the insurance companies themselves to stand up and do things differently. We've created a different situation. What we've seen in the past with insurance simply isn't working, and we need to fix that. And voices like your callers are so very important in this process.
And Mayor Stone.
Agreed. I agree wholeheartedly with what Councilmember Schuster said. Absolutely, the pressure needs to be applied to the insurance companies and the insurance commissioner. And I also echo my experience was exactly the same as Ricardo Lara in his office. He came to the city of Chico and presented to Paradise residents and Chico residents, and has been responsive thus far. But you know, that said, that only goes so far, and insurance companies have a whole lot of money to push back. And so it does mean getting a hold of Commissioner Lara's office and ensuring that the pressure is applied and remains.
Again, Randall Stone is mayor of the city of Chico. Ed Mayer is executive director of the Butte County Housing Authority, and we welcome you to the program, Ed Mayer. Good to have you.
Thank you. Great to have you invite.
Well, I've invited you because I think you have some fresh news about how many displaced people went back there. Can you tell us?
Well, we had 14,000 households houses destroyed in the disaster. There was about, we think, 3.5 people per household, so roughly 35,000 people were displaced. We now know with fair certainty that about 19,000 people showed up and are staying in the Chico area, and another 4,000 or so, if not more, are staying in the Oroville area. So we've accounted for about somewhere in the neighborhood of 23,000 of those who have been displaced out of the estimated 35,000 displaced. So we know that about half the population that was displaced is now in Chico and Oroville. The rest are scattered through Northern California and other environs. So the interesting thing about this is that so many people are really, really determined to stay in the area. We have households that have been displaced who, you know, they've not just been displaced from their homes, they've been displaced from their community. Many, many households in Paradise lived there for decades, and they really aren't anxious to locate elsewhere. So no matter what kind of housing opportunity we find, it could be regionally or even in the western half of the United States, we're not seeing a lot of movement. because we have concentrations of elderly and disabled who are vocal, and they don't really want to go anywhere. So what's ended up happening is that the cities of Chico and Oroville have picked up a tremendous amount of the population here.
Well, let me focus on Paradise for a moment more with you, Ed Mayer, because I think the statistic I saw most recently about lots that have been cleared, we started talking about that early on in this conversation, is still below 20%.
Exactly how many lots have been cleared? What I heard this week is that there's about 70 lots a day that are being cleared.
Well, hold on. Sonia, you have a figure here?
Yeah, I actually just looked this up this morning. So yeah. According to the state, 2,500 properties have had the debris removed, and that's about 25% of the properties that need it. There's debris removal, but then each property has to also go through soil confirmation and erosion control, that's only been completed on 304 properties.
Yeah, Ed Mayer.
That sounds consistent with what we're seeing. There's a tremendous amount of debris removal occurring. I mean, we have truck traffic. It's estimated there's a dump truck every 10 seconds on the Skyway. If you try to drive between this area and south to Sacramento, you're going to see major, major traffic delays all the way through Marysville as this debris is removed. But, so we're hearing, I've heard 70 lots a day being cleared. That's subject to not just the clearance, but also water considerations, the water district. We have contaminated service lines. So there's a lot of chicken and egg formative issues that have to be crossed before the community can be rehabited. So right now, the major piece of activity is this debris removal. Finally, with the end of winter, we have a full-scale operation going.
Let me read a comment from a listener to you, Ed Mayer. Listener's name is France, and writes, please talk about Magalia as well as Paradise. Paradise is discussed almost exclusively as though Magalia wasn't affected or doesn't exist. There was a lot of fire damage there as well. That's an unincorporated community in Butte County, right?
That's correct. It's unincorporated. It's right next to Paradise, just up the hill, really, from Paradise. About half of Magalia was affected by the fire. We have a lot of Section 8 clients, Section 8 program participants who receive federal rental assistance renting up in the Paradise and Magalia area. We had 320 households displaced by the fire. But to the degree we've been able to resettle Section 8 clients, Magalia has been fertile ground. So we've seen, I think, about 40 households repopulating in Magalia. Magalia is characterized, it typically does not have gas service, so it's got propane service. So it's interesting, propane is expensive compared to the alternative. So we have a lot of low-income families living up there in Magalia and in Paradise, but on propane. Anyways, they've been able to repopulate up there because the infrastructure was untouched, at least for half the community. But Magalia is an important piece of the Paradise complex.
Well, since you mentioned infrastructure, I'm going to go back to you, if I may, Melissa Schuster. Melissa Schuster, again, is Paradise Council member. Tim wants to know, is anything being done to improve the roads leading into and out of Paradise and adjacent communities? You alluded to this a little bit before. Could you spell out more what's being done, Melissa?
I would assume that he's referring to the roads for evacuation purposes.
Yeah, well, there was a big problem there because there was, a lot of lives were lost probably because of the problem there. Yeah.
Well, you know, there are a whole lot of misconceptions regarding the evacuation routes or roads in Paradise. Some people think that there was just one road in and out of Paradise Skyway. That is not true. There were seven evacuation routes out of Paradise. After the 2008 fires, the evacuation routes going through Butte Meadows above Magalia were paved. Many of the residents in Magalia used that route to get out of town. The fact that we evacuated close to 50,000 people in that sort of period of time is miraculous. Can there be improvements? Absolutely. And we will certainly look at those. We are looking at improving all of our roads through Paradise. In terms of looking at them from all safety aspects, not just evacuation, but daily travel and pedestrian traffic and all of those things will be a part of the rebuild as we move forward. Right now, it's going to be a long time before we get there because right now, every single one of our roads is being heavily impacted and destroyed by the debris removal process itself. So, you know, this isn't something that we have to wait until that process is completed. We can determine the amount of damage due to the debris removal process so we can be reimbursed for that and then move forward with improvements.
And again, Melissa Schuster is Paradise Town Council member, and we're talking about the efforts to rebuild Paradise 6 months after the devastating and catastrophic fire, the Camp Fire. And we're talking about this in light of the fact that we are hoping and strong hopes that this process will continue and those who want to go back will be able to do so and will be able to live peacefully and without the fear of this really fire-prone area just becoming a tinderbox again. I also want to remind you that this is a fundraising period for KQED Public Radio, and for more information about how to support KQED, go to kqed.org. I'm Michael Krasny. And let me go to some more comments by listeners. This is a comment from Jenny, who says, I lost my rental college in the Tubbs Fire. Thankfully, I got rental insurance 2 months prior and have support in my coworkers, family, and friends. I do not know what I would have done without that. I view this experience as a death and a rebirth. I am very thankful someone rented a granny unit to me on their property. I would not have had any affordable options in Sonoma County otherwise. Here's Marilee, who writes, my sister and her partner lived in Paradise for 13 years. They were there for the big fire in 2008 and as a result created emergency take with me lists that were broken down by the amount of time they would have to get out, 5 minutes, 15 minutes, etc. Should a fire strike again? Last November 8th, they didn't even have 5 minutes. They left with practically nothing. They not only lost their home and all the contents, but her partner's auto shop with three classic cars in it. Because of their ages, they decided immediately not to rebuild, but finding alternate housing to buy, even with their good insurance, has been a real challenge. The trauma of this is incredible. They have kept their spirits up, but I don't know how. That certainly typifies a lot of emotional reaction. Let me go back to Sonia Hudson, KQED news reporter, who's here with us in studio. You've talked to a lot of people there and obviously heard a lot of varied opinions. But for the most part, despite all the sadness, and there's a lot of resiliency, too, a lot of people who want to rebuild.
Absolutely. I think that people, everyone that I've talked to from Paradise just feel so connected to the town. They loved living there. It was this beautiful town in the middle of the forest, and I completely understand why you would want to continue to live there. And a lot of people have lived there for decades and decades and decades, and I totally understand why you would want to move back. And there's this big sense of hometown pride that I think a lot of us can relate to.
Well, there's still a post office open, there's still a Starbucks open, and there's still some businesses that are operating. In fact, the problem is the businesses aren't being a magnet for the customers. The customers aren't there, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's a really drastically different customer base than there was before the fire. You know, you have basically the kind of what they call the interim economy between the fire and, you know, more full recovery. We're kind of in the middle there is you have construction workers, people doing the actual labor of recovery. You have the couple thousand people that are still living in Paradise. And then you also have some people that will come up from, say, Chico, who lived in Paradise before to, you know, go to some of the shops and just visit. A lot of business owners that I've talked to, they are really optimistic. They want to stay there, but they also recognize that they get way fewer customers than they did before. And even a lot of the people that come in because they're workers. Like if you are a construction worker and you go into a clothing shop in Paradise, it's not likely on your lunch break that you're going to buy something. And so, but there are ways that they are pivoting to kind of deal with this different interim economy. For example, one of the grocery stores has put like picnic tables outside and they've made it kind of more of like a cafe lunch spot for some of the construction workers. So there's a lot of resiliency and a lot of heart and a lot of attachment.
But boy, do they need more construction workers and need, of course, more consumers.
Yeah.
Can I ask you, Mayor Stone, about the effect on the economy in Chico of the campfire?
I mentioned about property taxes.
Yeah.
We're not expecting a return of that. In terms of, we were talking about traffic and traffic problems and road problems, we have a 20% increase in our population, which means that it's harder and harder to get around. People are white knuckled. The traffic is moving like everyone's constantly looking for an address. And it's just, it clogs it up. We're the traffic equivalent to a clogged toilet. And that's going to create problems with the economy. That's going to create problems with people trying to continue their businesses as they're occupying absolutely every possible commercial space available, even if it won't work for an office, just to make sure that they can continue their business activities. Now, to that end, we've asked the state of California for mitigations, property tax backfills, and $12 million for a traffic mitigation system that just moves our traffic more readily, especially around rush hour times. Those types of things tremendously change the quality of life, and that's really what we're also trying to maintain as best as possible. With the collective trauma, with becoming as hard as it is, I mean, Chico's a fantastic place to live. Butte County's a fantastic place to live. It's just a little hard right now.
All right, we'll leave it there with Chico being a fantastic place to live. We heard the paradise will be not only livable, but eventually be paradisical, as many feel that it once was. Let me thank all of our guests. Randall Stone, again, is mayor of the city of Chico. Melissa Schuster is a Paradise Council member. We also spoke with Mark Albert earlier, morning host and reporter for North State Public Radio, and Sonia Hudson, who is here with us in studio, reporter for KQED News. We're here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, and an hour is repeated in the evening at 10 p.m. You can continue this discussion. In fact, we invite you to do that online at kqed.org/forum. Thank you for being a part of this morning's forum program. For all of us here at KQED, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.